Don't mind us, everybody. Al is just stuffing his face full of Beto's.
No, it's Taco Bell.
Whatever it is, the man is just eating like a crazed horse. Like that. A horse.
This is so good.
A horse of a man eating the Taco Bell, the chalupas, the Dorito Crunch wrap things. Taco Bell.
Let me teach you the best lunch value America has to offer.
Oh boy, here we go. Yes.
It's called 3 bean burritos from Taco Bell. Coming in roughly, sometimes under $3, but right at about $3.
But what about
I am a full happy man.
What about the nutritional info about said burritos?
I don't know what the nutritional info is. I just know I'm full, and the food was relatively warm and cheesy.
In my quest for a hotter body, let me tell you what I've learned.
Why is okay.
This? Nothing. I just wanted to start off with that. Oh, sorry. And for those, this is called This Week in Mormons, and we're talking about Taco Bell. We talk every
Taco
week.
Taco Bell and Hot Body.
Every week on this show, we go over Mormon news, things that's going on, that's going on relevant to the Mormon community.
Yeah, it's a nice show. You know, we have fun with it. I just kind of follow Jeff on the drums. Jeff, take us there.
That's who we are, and we're starting our third year. So thank you for tuning in, folks. I just want to know, Al, how are you doing though?
I'm good. I just realized I got an empanada as well, so my day just got infinitely better.
They sell those there?
Mm. Mm.
I didn't even know you're doing a what?
It's like I'm at a carnival right now. This is amazing.
So deep fried butter is not far off.
No, it's not.
Welcome
to me, Iowa.
Have you had those Australian potatoes at carnivals?
The ones with the big juicy gherkin?
No, the ones when they like scallop potatoes and then batter them and then fry them. It's unholy. And I've had them a few times, and every time I have them, I ask myself why I did this.
Australian potatoes? Are they good?
They're called Australian fried. Like, you'll have one or two, and it's kind of a fun novelty, and then it just feels like a brick in your stomach, and it's just terrible. And you can't eat those. Don't.
That is most things I eat.
Don't get the skip scramble.
What is that from? That thing you do?
That is from Arrested Development, my friend.
Oh.
But close.
Oh.
I'm sure our listeners are very much enjoying listening to you.
Nom, 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 nom.
Masticate and swallow.
So here's... I mean, that's just what you get when you're listening to us. I mean, I am an on-the-go man.
I feel, have we dwindled in our quality on this production? Is this what it is? We used to take this seriously.
But we have more fun now.
Maybe. Sure, we had one listener.
Sure, fewer listeners, but more fun.
We had a listener named Joseph who posted on our Facebook wall and who said, oh, I love, you know what's missing from your shows? 10-minute discussions about flash drives versus cloud storage.
Oh, no, we have that.
Yeah,
perfect.
We do have that. So I don't know what the problem
was.
Was
he being sarcastic?
I believe he was being facetious, yes.
Let me go make fun of him. Hold
you
on.
Should go. I already did, and I even phrased it like you.
Oh, yeah?
I said your, Y-E-R, which is pretty much just something you say. I wanted him to think it was me, or you, rather.
I'm not sure what you're saying right now.
Neither am I. I don't know who I am anymore.
What is love? So anyway, more on flash drives.
Nope, no more on that. But,
wait, what is this guy?
So Alice,
where is he? Where are you, Joseph something?
It's not on our... It's like you have to look over on the comments people post.
Oh.
It's not on the wall because we don't have our wall enabled for posts to show up. And that's our Facebook wall, folks. Facebook.com/This Week in Mormons. Go there. You will be blessed for so doing. So, yeah. So, I get married like in a week or so.
Jeff, you know what that means. You never have to clean your room again.
I know.
Congratulations.
I don't have to try about in so many things anymore. Now I get to live the dream of a man who just makes money and trashes the house and expects her to clean up after me.
Yeah. Honey, I'm home.
And as I say that, I'll drop my coat and my bag right there on the floor and just walk away.
And then be like, me and the boys are gonna hit some poker tonight.
I mean, it's not my problem anymore.
Why don't you make yourself useful and get us some snacks, huh?
So, Al, I've got a story I think you'll appreciate. Before we get into, like, Mormon content, I think you'll enjoy this.
Yeah, before we jump right into Mormon news, let's talk for a bit. Okay.
Well, we always banter. No, you'll appreciate this. So, you know...
Joseph Dangerfield Peterson, what he... this is what we do. You don't like it? Go to the cultural hall.
We hate them. Monsters.
All right. All right, what's up?
So, you know, as like flirty couples, engaged couples, what have you often do, you have morning pleasantries when you're not married yet, you know, texting each other, something like that, right? Sure. And so I greeted my loved one with a text message the other day. We were talking and I just said, you know, I said, hola, want to make out?
Yeah.
And so I clicked the send button. And then a few hours later, when my mom responded to the text message I accidentally sent her, it was wonderful.
Hey-o. What'd she say, Jeff?
Interesting text message, son. I failed. I asked my mom if she wanted to make out.
But she didn't say yes?
She did not consent, no.
That's the ultimate rejection. When your own mother won't make out with you, what have you left?
So my dear fiancé has been cracking up about this all week and won't let me forget it. And she actually figured you were going to torture me about it once I told you, but, you know, figured it out.
No, no. I mean, this stuff happens. I've told my text messaging snafu stories on here.
You mean like the time
I've had some
the time
dizzies.
You argued with a woman who wasn't even your date or whatever that was?
The time I yelled at her and then the next morning she was like, hey, thanks for that dinner last night. And I was like, you snooty little punk. Where do you get off? No, I had a friend that called me the other day and was like, hey, what was the name of that girl that you went over to her house and
did what exactly? What did you do at her house?
And she was waiting, like, she was getting ready for a date, and you texted her some, like, I can't believe you're taking this long, but when you meant to send it to your buddy. And I had to reply and say, which one? Which girl are you referencing? Which dating snafu of mine are you referring to? Because there are many that fall in that category.
I know, we're lacking for them lately, my friend.
Well, I'm going to pick up steam. I'm going to start dating like crazy again soon.
Good, because I need to come to you.
I was in a one-sided committed relationship for a month there.
A one-sided committed relationship?
Well, I don't know what it was.
Which side was committed?
This is why dating is hard, because here's my rule. I won't kiss more than one girl at a time. I think that's a fair rule. And so because of that, like, you normally kiss, you're going in for the smooch after date, I don't know, 3 or 4. But 3 or 4 isn't enough to really be exclusive, I don't think.
Yeah.
But you still want to have a little fun.
Oh,
and so
sure.
Here I am at date 3 and 4 to about date 10, and I'm still like, I don't know if you're the one for me. So like, I'm in like a reluctant, I won't date other people while I'm waiting for this to pan out, but I'm not totally in love type of relationship. It's weird. Maybe I need to regress my morals a little bit.
I believe
maybe
your morals have regressed.
Maybe that's the answer to my problem. Not that I need to be more emotionally available. Rather, I need to make out with more women.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it works for everyone. It's like you cast a wider net. Eventually, one of those fish is going to get stuck.
From an emotional health standpoint, this is sound sage advice.
It really is. I mean, you've got to be active out there on the seas with the nets, casting the nets. With the
more women you make out with, the more prone you are going to be to commit to one.
Also, hemorrhoids. No, not hemorrhoids. Herpes.
All of these things.
You will also be
things.
Prone to that.
Yeah, so I had a spell there for a while where I wasn't dating anybody else, but I'm pretty, like, I don't think there was certainly no, like, commitment thing, but I don't know. It was weird. Well, I have a weird dating life, Jeff.
Yeah, no, I've known you for many, many years. I know this. I mean,
I know.
In the time I've known you, I can't even think about how many actual committed girlfriends you've had.
No, I've had a few. Yeah, the ones that I have are like, yeah.
Yeah.
They go long term.
That's okay. It's all good.
Yeah, it's good.
Speaking of dating, so you guys, you know that the Mormon Bachelorette, beyond all understanding, is going to come back, right?
Is it really? Oh, is there updates on the site?
Not much, but they posted an update from one Kent Tuttle, the man who bowed out of the Mormon Bachelor and allowed his very, very boring friend, Chris Barbour, to take his place. An update from Kent about, you know, because he left the show because he found true love with a girl.
Yeah. How is he?
Well, they broke up, so as these things often do.
So he wants back in.
Yeah, I find it ironic that the only lasting relationships that seem to have come out of this entire production are from Aubrey and Aaron the producer, the two friends who started it in the first place.
Wait, those are the comments?
No, but that's what I think. I mean, no one else is getting married, but those two have managed to get married. They've basically used this and walked on other people just so they could serve their own neediness. And of course, it doesn't work out with Kent Tuttle. Shocker, folks. Shocker.
We are waiting with bated breath.
Blown away that this... Wow.
Who else he will choose?
Speaking of, the regular Bachelor has started, and I haven't seen it yet. And I'm actually mad at myself for failing to DVR it the other night.
I'm mad at you for failing
to DVR it. I haven't seen it. I need to get sucked into something. I mean, come on. Oh, it's terrible.
Sad. Sad.
You're very enthusiastic in this show, Al. Maybe you can amp up.
No, I was watching the Carly Stiles, who Kent Tuttle didn't work out
with. Is that her real name? I mean, that sounds like she is involved in some form of adult entertainment, if you ask me.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, good.
Just say, I mean, come on. Anyone who goes by Stiles, Stylez, it's like you're a stripper in Miami. I think that's... That's what I'm getting from this.
I like that you could narrow down that regional reference to Miami.
Generally, when I think of immorality, I just think of Miami.
See, and I'm all Omaha, so I guess we come from different places.
Well, Berkshire Hathaway does have those wild holiday parties.
With all 17 employees.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Anyway, so that happened. Other Mormon things are going on. Al, just take us through. You posted so much stuff this week. I want you to have the gratification of...
bringing us material. Sort of not Mormon news, but you know, worth mentioning. The Washington National Cathedral is set to perform same-sex marriages.
Interesting.
So this is a Catholic cathedral, right?
No, it is. Well, it's
a non-denominational.
It's sort of nothing, but it's basically Episcopalian.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so that's a big. I mean. I see more of this coming down the pipe. I'm so torn on this because I don't like. Part of me is like, awesome, cool. The other part of me is like, don't you, Jeff? Like, is there nothing?
I don't really pay attention to what happens across the Potomac, so whatever. I mean,
no, I'm speaking specifically around like gay marriage and stuff. I'm just so torn on that issue of, it's hard to draw a line and just say marriage. No, marriage is, we're keeping that. That's for straight people. And, I'm fine with that as our stance. I'm okay with it, but there's still a part of me that's like, that doesn't understand exactly how it's all going to play out. Right.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Do you have that at all?
How it's going to play out? I mean, there's no way to know that.
I'm super for us preserving. Super for, that sounds great. I am very adamant about us preserving marriage and our right to perform marriages between a man and a woman in our temples and in our religion, and for us to believe that. I'm also all for gay rights. I love that they're winning ground in some political battles and stuff that they haven't in the past, and it's kind of a conflicted stance for me. But
I completely understand that, and I think one of the biggest areas of concern for Latter-day Saints has to be whether temple marriages or church marriages, for that matter, even if you got married in a chapel by a bishop, but whether those would continue to be recognized by the state, which really is a luxury. I mean, in many ways, we've been to countries where that's not the norm, where right. Latter-day Saints have to just go to the courthouse or whatever and then go to the temple. But it's still something that I think we are able to appreciate by and large in the United States. And I'm not going to lie. I'm glad I'm getting married before any of the crap really hits the fan with that. And so I don't have to deal with it. You know, it's nice. But it really is that. I mean, as far as that aspect of it, it's just like, whatever. So is it going to kill people later on down the road if they have to go to City Hall first and then just go to the temple the same day? I mean, the important thing is the ceiling. That's what we believe in anyway. That's what matters. We just have to be legally and lawfully wedded as well.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. Well, so stuff like this is happening. I would not be surprised to see Catholic cathedrals and things like that follow suit in the next year or two.
Well, think Catholic cathedrals, though? Because after perhaps the Latter-day Saints, the Catholic Church is kind of like the biggest stalwart against gay marriage as well. I mean, we're kind of like the buddy buddies who keep having each other's backs.
Well, all right, maybe I.
I mean, Protestant groups keep becoming more liberal about it and being open about it. But
because the thing that I guess what I'm referencing is there's like certain factions. Well, and I guess there's factions of Mormons that do similar things too, but factions of Catholicism where, like, you know, they've got. Well, and the gay bishops that are now practicing in there, like, they're, what? Gosh, I am double talking all over the place because I'm realizing,
about Opus
like,
Day?
as I'm saying this, though, I'm realizing we've made the exact same, not concessions, but like the exact same stuff is happening with us where,
oh, yeah.
Like, we're giving ground on a lot of fronts that, I mean, and we're just kind of choosing to pick our battles, which maybe the Catholic Church is doing the same thing.
They might. So, it's pretty fascinating when you see the similarities between our two churches. I mean, even as other Protestant religions are okay with female clergy and stuff like that, and we in Catholicism stand strong and about having, you know, male clergy. It's just, it's very interesting the parallels we have. And considering the two of us are the ones who really claim a priesthood lineage, I think that's also interesting that we share these other things this far down the line. It's unrelated, but that's all.
It's truth. Truth.
Speaking of truth, those who are training to bring truth to the world are all dying. That's right, folks. The MTC, mass outbreaks of cholera and emphysema.
Those who are training to bring the truth are dying. That's a great headline. Oh, use that. Today's
thank
show.
You. Thank you very much. So
today's title is...
No, okay, so there's no cholera, but there is consumption. Not really.
It's the flu.
So,
and they can't go on...
There is the flu. The whole MTC is on lockdown. They won't even let the prophet in.
Is that true?
Anyone who is stuck there is stuck in a bunker. I have it on good authority that Quentin L. Cook was visiting, and now he is stuck in the cafeteria and not being allowed to leave by his security detail.
We're getting YouTube updates from him. Hey, guys! Guys, I'm still here. Day 4.
I can only have so much Caesar salad and chocolate milk.
I've drank 60 glasses. That was my thing. A tray of chocolate milk.
Was my diet. Like, I did not like any of the MTC food, so I would pretty much just eat salads and chocolate milk. No wonder I lost weight on my mission. I mean, what?
I did not lose weight in the MTC.
I did.
They done well by me.
And then in the Madrid MTC, when they would serve what we affectionately referred to as fried cat... It just got better and better. Anyway, for some real updates, so that's about 250 have been sick in the MTC, just flu, stuff like that.
Which
but
is
a lot
nothing, because there's
down.
Like 3,000 missionaries in there, so it's not, like, this isn't a shutdown.
It's about what? This is like 10% of the MTC, though, right?
No, it's not 10%. Well, yeah, I guess about 10%.
That's still...
I would say 8.
You know, it's not going to be the end of the world, but, you know... Just don't go to the MTC right now. If you were going to break in and try to go to the bookstore for good deals, now is not the time.
Yeah, your MSF is no good there.
Yeah, very bad idea.
Go home. Let's see. Also, I'm just going to stay on my gay and lesbian
theme.
Stay
there.
The openly bisexual and Mormon congresswoman is elected. It's down in Arizona, yes?
Well,
Jeff?
If the state can elect Jam Brewer, surely... They can elect anybody.
She seems like a nice woman.
Well, many bisexual women are nice women.
That's true.
Or gay ones. Or straight ones. Nice women.
All women. A lot of women are nice.
The world over.
So she like, this is just kind of an article around the, you know, are you a pioneer for this? Blah, blah, blah. I do not believe, no, she's not an active LDS woman.
No, she was raised Mormon, but of course the classic headline tries to grab you in as if some active bisexual
totally
woman
worked.
Is around.
Totally worked. We were all in. But yeah, so she's doing that and more just riding that Mormon moment.
Well, her name is Kirsten Cinema, which also sounds like a porn star name once again.
Like a Miami, I mean, like a Miami
seriously.
Stripper.
And the way it's spelled, KYRSTENSINEMA.
Come on. That's also, you know, your parents had to have known something.
Or it's just Utah.
Cinema.
Well, I mean, come on.
Put your phones in cinema mode.
Spelled like that. So yeah, she went to BYU. She did this and that. I don't want to get into details here, but at some point she realized that aside from men, she enjoyed sometimes canoodling with the ladies.
Yep.
And but it's a big deal because she is the first open bisexual to be elected to Congress.
They made it. There you go.
It's actually been a kind of a red letter year, I think. Wasn't it also this election? Was this when we finally... No, I was going to say the first gay member of Congress, but that's silly. Barney Frank has been in Congress forever. I'm sorry. I misspoke.
I was waiting for a Harry Reid joke.
I hope that you will apologize. I would like to do some updates here. On the Mormon of the Year, we talked about it a few weeks ago. The polling has closed, so if you did not vote, I'm sorry.
You missed it. You didn't make it.
But we can break down the top vote getters, what we've seen so far anyway. To no one's surprise, number one, with 37.15% of the vote, ironically about on par with how he polled nationally, Mitt Romney.
Ooh, Jeff. Low blows.
Mitt Romney, 37. Number two, pulling up second place, not a big surprise either, Joanna Brooks has 25% of the vote. And after that, it gets, you know,
It should be noted, our bottom three, of course, John McNaughton, the illustrator who no one's heard of, Jabari Parker, who did not choose BYU, and the Neon Trees.
It's wonderful. Bryce Harper is not far off either.
Hey, but he's not in the bottom three.
But I am surprised or impressed that the gay and BYU students got nearly 12% of the vote. I mean, we made fun of them.
As a conglomerate, so individually, though, that's like a 0.003% because there was a lot of them.
Exactly. So individually, they're actually weaker than Neon Trees. But then again, Neon Trees has four people, so maybe they're even weaker.
Mitt Romney should have found a Paul Ryan to combine his efforts with.
Oh, Paul Ryan. I forgot he even exists.
Sad story.
I know. Well, anyway, so we'll let you know what happens when the Mormon of the Year is chosen by Times and Seasons. Who knows what will happen? Who knows?
It will be amazing. So, back to the... We could have done better with the thematic progression of this, but...
Oh, sure.
Missionaries in the MTC still... We got two for you.
Okay, take us there.
Two big ones. First, the church has a video out around the big boon in you know, new missionaries and stuff, which is good. I mean, it's good to capitalize on the public's
My
interest.
Understanding is more of them are applying.
Yeah, there are. Well, and so the church is being cognizant of like trying to give a good MTC experience, people not cheapen that experience, and so they're spacing them out. But I know a ton of people that are like, the expectation is the church is going from like 3,000 to like 4,800 ish, right, in the MTC.
How are they even going to hold that? Like, I mean, they're not going to build that new building for one. Like, where are they
Jeff,
put...
let me. He holds the itty bitty babies.
Where will they put a 50%
in his hand? He puts the mamas and the papas in his hands. He puts all the missionaries. They put him in their hands. He's got the whole world in his hands.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm actually kind of proud of that moment. That was great. MTC dealing with a lot of that. There's also an article this week on the businesses profiteering off of well-intentioned little missionaries. So businesses like DearElder.com and MTC Deliveries and things like that mm-hmm. that are all that are all just loving life now that missionaries are hopping.
Go ahead.
How do we feel about that? How do we feel about... Because I kind of... Growing up, I often thought it would have been cool to make, like, Mormon figurines. And then somebody did make Mormon, Book of Mormon action figures. And I look at it and I'm like, $9 for that stupid Moroni? Really? Like, yeah. Is it okay? I was all of a sudden conflicted about the morality of profiteering solely on Mormon folk.
Right, but, I mean... People in Utah are predominantly Mormon. So, you know, isn't this just knowing your market?
Is it taking a religion and saying, I can make a buck on that?
Yeah, I know. I could see it going both ways. But I don't know. I mean, look at quilting stuff, right? I mean, there are probably places you don't bother pushing advertising, right?
No, I would push advertising.
I mean, come on. Like, realistically, there are markets that don't work. For any product, there are markets that work better and those that don't work as well. So I understand it could be, like, profiteering based on one's religious persuasion because, you know, if I were to go to, like...
Well, no, it's a little bit different.
If I were to go to, like, a Lutheran bookstore and see an action figure of Martin Luther, I would find it pretty funny. So I get it.
Why would you find it funny?
Just for the same reason you didn't like the action figure of Moroni. It's like, you know, it's toys and things that are relevant to our people. But if we care that much, half of what they sell in the kids section of Deseret Book would just be just absurd and unnecessary.
And it's not absurd because we don't care?
I believe in the free market. I believe the market will correct itself. So, you know, whatever. If you want to make those
the invisible hand. Then,
hey, whatever. That's your thing. I'm a libertarian, Al. Come on.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. But, like, I look at some of that stuff that comes out that's, like, specifically, hey, you're Mormon. That means you should want to buy this. I made this Mormon version of a scripture-carrying case so that you'll buy it.
I think that perhaps sometimes we are more inclined to produce, like, more awful stuff than we need to solely because we assume, like you said, hey, you're Mormon, you want this. I mean, I think a great example of that is Mormon cinema, as it's so erroneously called.
You know, Congresswoman? Or is this a different sister cinema?
No, you know, film. Film. And how way more of it has probably been made than needs to have been made, than is profitable. And a lot of it's just terrible, but it's made because they assume Mormons are going to love it solely because it has a Mormon stamp on it. And oftentimes we do have this lemming mentality in the church.
I remember going to God's Army in the theater in Missouri. It showed in one theater and we were like, yeah, got to support Mormondom.
And because back then especially, it was really cool because there had not been a feature film released in theaters outside of Utah, really. That talked about things like that. Back then it was really, really cool, and I felt the same way when that came out, you know? But
now
it jumps the shark at some point.
Now we don't love it.
But Mr. Mac has gotta be just doing great business now.
Oh, Mr. Mac is booming. He's featured in there. Who else? The Covered Wagon Chocolatery at the Gateway Mall.
I've never even heard of that. Does anyone go to the Gateway anymore?
No, dude. I went to the Gateway the other day and it was like me, the girl I was with, and three other people.
I feel really, really bad for the Gateway because it's not even that old.
And I was at Starbucks, and the guy was like, yeah, times are tough. And I was like, did City Creek take it on? He's like, yeah, they even promised to play fair, but then they offered the Apple Store, like, free rent for a year so they could get them over there, and they're leaving. And, like, everything that the Gateway had is now gone.
This Starbucks actually has a bar with stools, doesn't it? I mean, you're sitting there drinking your hot chocolate, and he's just like...
Tough racket, this. Gateway Mall, huh, buddy? Yeah.
You talk about the old days. Yeah, but that's sad. You know what it's like. It's fine to build new stuff, but, man, Gateway got killed by the church, really.
Well, and what was that other mall that used to be right by Temple Square?
Well, they used to have Crossroads and ZCMI, which were both owned by the church, and the church tore them down to build City Creek.
That's the one.
Because they were terrible malls.
Yeah. The Gateway's a nice enough mall, but Salt Lake just can't support two malls within a block.
Yeah, they're way too close together. And, of course, I think, because City Creek is large. There's a lot of outdoorsy stuff, but it's better designed. I mean, you know, like the whole outdoor shopping thing very much started in the mid-90s as a trend, and the Gateway reflects that, I think, very much. And it's
that's what the guy said. He was like, again, my quote-unquote bartender at Starbucks serving me hot chocolate. He was like, yeah, you know, during the Olympics, We was on top of the world. But now, nobody wants to shop in 3-degree weather.
Well, look what 10 years does. It's sad. So, I don't know.
It's true.
I guess it's a good, actually, a fair topic, Al. How prone are we to buying Mormon stuff that's catered to Mormons?
I just don't like it. I just don't like it.
Because a lot of it's
But at the same time, it's convenient. It's handy.
But what about the Lion House? I mean, come on. Don't you want to go to the Lion House pantry?
No. No, I don't.
Well, you're a monster.
It feels cheeky.
I know. I'm sorry. Be happy.
You're welcome. It's okay.
Were those both of your missionary stories, or was that just one of them?
That was both of them. Okay. Knocked them both out.
I'm just keeping it straight in my head. So, as we start the new year of Gospel Doctrine Lessons, and of course I'm excited since I produce with some others the Sunday School Bonanza podcast. And
you can find it on This Week in Mormons.
Yeah, you can go to thisweekinmormons.com. And as a side note, we were going to give it its own feed on iTunes for the Doctrine and Covenants lessons, but I think we'll just keep it on the existing subscription.
We'll file that under things you don't care about.
They might.
Hey, Jonathan, how about put that with your flash drives?
Which, ironically, we store our episodes in the cloud. I mean, so
and not on worthless flash drives.
So whatever. So the point is, there's an interesting article here on By Common Consent about organizing the Doctrine and Covenants lessons, or why the topical approach doesn't work. Now, what the author is referring to is the fact that, unlike a lot of the other church lessons, the Doctrine and Covenants manual is very thematic in its approach. It's not like we're going through each section and talking about the history of them and understanding sort of the evolution of the church, which the author argues is unfortunate because we actually sort of see the understanding of the saints evolve from section 1 to 138. Like, you know, the priesthood is like different in section 20 as it is compared to section 88 or then to 107, right? Because more stuff was revealed as time went on. Greater understanding illuminated us. And I think that's a fair argument. But because instead, because we don't dare risk getting in these situations as in gospel doctrine classes of risking having, you know, what are often mediocre teachers trying to handle that much sort of depth in a lesson, we organize it thematically. So like lesson 2 this week, unfortunately, is solely about how Christ is represented in the Doctrine and Covenants. And that's great, and he is, but it's like, well, yeah, no duh, he's represented. He gave all the revelations in it. Where are you supposed to go with that? So the lesson bounces around to section 18, section 40, section this. It's very thematic, as it says.
Wait, you don't like the thematic study? Because wouldn't it be more useful to study the priesthood as a theme and go, here's the progression of the priesthood from this?
Well, I'm sort of playing devil's advocate here. I think that thematic is more useful in sort of a general setting and where we don't depend on our gospel doctrine teachers to be actual like historians of the church or anything, which is fine. They're not supposed to be. Everyone has a calling, right? But as far as the arguments that Benjamin Park puts out, I think it's interesting to read about because, like he puts an example, there's an article in this month's Ensign, actually, where someone says, quote, and this is in the Ensign, which is fascinating because the Ensign never carries anything with a negative connotation. But it says, while many members today may look at the revelations as being static and unchanging, and that I think is part of the problem with the thematic approach, the prophet Joseph Smith saw the revelations as living and subject to change as the Lord revealed more of his will. Members of the church relied upon Joseph to receive continued revelations for the church. As former church historian Elder Marlon K. Jensen of the 70 has explained, Joseph seemed to regard the manuscript revelations as his best efforts to capture the voice of the Lord, condescending to communicate in what Joseph called the crooked, broken, scattered, and imperfect language of men. I hope future Sunday school curriculum will reflect this attitude.
I hope it will too.
So the point is, I know we can't have in-depth discussions all the time about all this stuff. And the Doctrine and Covenants is different. We can't approach it from a narrative standpoint because, you know, there is no narrative. It's individual sections. But I think we would stand to learn something more for more of the historical context. I think the downside of a thematic approach is we'll talk about the priesthood, and then we'll quote a verse that supports that, but we don't necessarily dig into the reasons why that verse came about, you know? Like what the history is.
Yeah, so that's the biggest problem, that's the biggest problem. Studying the Doctrine and Covenants is that you, like, context is so important with every verse in that in that
book. That's what we tend to leave out in the way our manuals are actually organized.
Well, because we do, and a lot of it is the actual characters and stuff. I mean, some of them were, and I don't know if this is us just trying to find the good parts and shy away from the bad parts. Sure, but I mean, sure. There's prominent players in the early days of the church that went, you know, were very good, and then were very bad, and then were good again, and like, you know, kind of hopping all over. And some of these revelations address, you know, some situations, I guess, that happened back in the early days of the church that are hard to understand or discuss and have an open discussion about. It all works out in the end, but it's not a perfect rosy picture. I mean, there's like, good drama in the early days of the church.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. A lot goes wrong. I think our lessons are still good. They're obviously useful, and I think they help us to ponder these concepts. But I understand these arguments presented by this author, that we could stand to understand more of the context and historical background of what we're studying, because that could only help us appreciate it more.
Well, I know when I've studied the Doctrine and Covenants, I had a good experience. I had a study guide or two next to me, and every section that you get to, I mean, that's the other hard thing, is the Doctrine and Covenants, if you don't study it thematically, you can't study it section one all the way down, or even chronologically. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you bounce all over the place.
Here we are talking about tithing. Here we are talking about priesthood. Here we are talking about the Godhead. I mean, like, there's just no rhyme or reason. So if you try and read like a novel, you're going to be frustrated. And so, I mean, it's a book that demands that you have careful study. It's very similar, I feel like, to Isaiah and the way that we have to study Isaiah. If you try and just read through Isaiah, it is the most frustrating experience in the world. But you sit down with a couple of guides and things that can help you get the context and some of the historical relevance of the issues that they're discussing, and it's a magnificent experience.
It is. But that said, understanding perhaps the chronology and how that shaped the receiving of said revelations can also be beneficial, but that is more time consuming and, you know, laborious. So
yeah
well, that's that.
It's that. Let's see, another one from the Annals of Weber State.
Is this the bishop?
This is a singles bishop.
Oh,
Bishop Chad Reed. Bishop Reed. Don't worry, Bishop Reed. Reed is accused of swindling his ward members at his singles ward out of $50,000 investments with a guaranteed return. But he never delivered. He took $270,000 and then the church released him. He's no longer serving as a bishop, and criminal charges are being brought against him.
Well, when one bilks, one often pays the price.
So, dear Utah, again, if we may, do not use church position or priesthood position as an excuse to not be a prudent investor. Do not just hand checks over to people outside of tithing. You can hand those checks over without any research. But don't just cut a check to a guy who you trust because he's an ecclesiastical leader. We've seen this probably a dozen times since we've been doing this show, Jeff, don't you think?
Yeah, but
like, there is a bunch of this that happens, and it's almost exclusively to Utah.
But if you can't trust your bishop, who can you trust? As Richard Belding said to Zach Morris, if you can't trust your principal, who can you trust?
And what's the answer?
No one, apparently.
No one. You can trust no one.
I mean, I get it. That sucks. In the church, we want to naturally trust. As far as the active, you know, fraternity of the church, we want to trust people. It's our natural inclination as humans. And so it's sad when that is sort of trounced upon.
What a schmo, man. Like, yeah. Well, because that's the other thing, is you get a little Doctrine and Covenants 121 in there. It's like, yeah, you're going to abuse your priesthood? Ich.
Ich is right.
I would be wary.
In a completely unrelated move, Lehi is now scrapping the name of a street called Morning Glory Road due to a possible phallic reference. And the funny thing is, this isn't as much Lehi as a software company called Exactware Solutions. So they're expanding at their business, and they are afraid this would scare away customers.
Why? Being on Morning Glory Road?
I guess. They'll drive on Morning Glory Road. Then they will say, "What kind of a filthy town is this? I see modestly dressed people everywhere. I can't do my business here."
Where is the Morning Wood?
Yeah, see, Morning Wood would have been a much more awesome name for a street, I think. And I would have petitioned to have it remain, actually.
We could have fought their
battle. Get our listeners to protest. This is the greatest street name of all time, Lehi. Not since the days of Footloose have you oppressed the youth so much. Ugh.
But I don't know. Good old... Well,
it's so stupid, but it's funny.
One of the great things about this is that, you know, somebody's like, oh, we'll name it after that invasive flower that takes over our gardens. And then they were like, yeah, that's a great name. And then you get done with it, and you're like, hold up. I did not Urban Dictionary that street name. I should have checked.
I don't know if the, like, Lehi City Council or Planning Commission knows what Urban Dictionary is. I would venture that they do not.
Yeah, probably. Okay, so Urban Dictionary is where you go to look up what slang terms mean.
And it's often very dirty, so don't always do it.
Most terms have really dirty connotations. You can make anything dirty, so
you can.
Trust that somebody's made it dirty
Just
before.
Trust me and Al. You can make anything sound dirty. Anything.
Boy, don't I know.
Oh,
back to flash drives in a minute.
I bet you do. And the final few things today before we go, Sunstone had a sort of mini-conference. And if you're familiar with Sunstone, of course, it is the organization that they publish their journal and conference. It's all about Mormon thought. But they are often ridiculed, as it says in this article, for being whiny, godless heathens.
Wait, the Sunstone folks?
I get it. I mean, the Sunstone people, they talk about being sort of a place for legitimate discussion about Mormon issues, you know, in a very real and sometimes a secular way, but more in an academic way too. But a lot of times this slides into just angry, less active people talking about whatever. That happens a lot. It does. I mean, at Sunstone. So in response, they actually had a little conference over the weekend with 60 people that they had at the Salt Lake Library. That was a Christ conference. All of it was centered around Christ. So they're trying to combat this image, actually, which I think is pretty interesting. So there's not a lot more to it, but they wanted to have a conference specifically to discuss, not from an academic perspective, Christ, not just that anyway, but like the sacred role of Christ in our lives and in the gospel. I think this has been missing from Sunstone, so I think it is a good step forward for them.
You know what else has been missing from Sunstone?
Do tell.
Our interest.
I see the words and the jokes and things.
So Elder Neil L. Anderson spoke to the graduating seminary students.
Yeah.
Or not. Were they graduating?
I think it's like existing seminary students.
He just went and spoke to seminary kids, told a parable, or just talked about how, we can learn some lessons from a butterfly in a jar.
That
spiritual gifts are sensitive and very delicate and must be refined, much like a butterfly coming out of the cocoon.
So where,
as an individual sees beyond themselves, they begin to see who the Lord would have them become, much like a butterfly coming from a caterpillar. To become what God would have an individual become, they will need gifts of the Savior in their own correct choices, and then all are children of God with eternal possibilities available. I don't know, that was cool. That would have been cool as a seminary student to heard an apostle speak to me.
I would dig it. I mean, only in Utah.
Where were
right?
it 20 years ago, Neil?
Yeah, come to D.C., Neil. Love us.
We love you.
And lastly, in case you missed it, the performance of music and the spoken word this past week by the Tabernacle Choir was dedicated in memory of the victims of the Newtown Massacre. There's no other news to accompany that, but I think it's nice that the Tabernacle Choir went out of their way to honor those who have fallen in that.
Yeah. Classy move. And that's it.
Yep. Okay. So go to thisweekinmormons.com. Shoot us an email at contact@thisweekinmormons. And go to the book face and find us at This Week in Mormons. Like us. Share us.
Love us truly.
And at the Real Twim on Twitter. Look out for Sunday School Bonanza, where we will be reviewing the gospel, the Book of Mormon, not Book of Mormon, sorry, the Gospel Doctrine, Church History, and Doctrine.
Also,
and
Jonathan, if you'd like to send us a flash drive, you're welcome.
It's time.
To.
Okay, you're really. It's time to let this one go.
No, sorry, we don't discuss enough tech news for you, Johnny boy. But I demand that you are entertained while we do.
Well, good. So we hope you enjoyed this week. Lots of fun things happened. Al, I hope that you continue to sell fabric at an efficacious and expedited clip.
Thank you, Jeff.
You are welcome, sir. Hope, yes, you are very welcome.
Man. I hope that you are prepared for all things marriage.
I'm not, but I'm going to try.
All right, man. Hey, I'll be in San Diego next week. We'll talk then.
Well, we'll talk before then. But yeah, it'll be good.
All right, buddy. We'll see you, man.
I love you.
Bye now.
Do you love me?
I'll miss you.
Love me.
You're cute.
What? Okay, well, this has been This Week of Mormons. All right, goodbye, everyone. I hope you find love.